Wyoming Public Television Endowment Account, creating the Wyoming Public Television Matching Funds Account, depositing prior appropriations into the account, providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number two appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 59, Wyoming Public Television Endowment Accounts, respectfully report same back to the House for a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, and Stubson. One no vote, Representative Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 59 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and, Mr. Chairman, I'll briefly explain the bill. Members, this bill simply codifies in statute a matching endowment for our Wyoming Public Television. We have actually had this account in session law in the budget since, I think, 2008 session. Since that time, we have appropriated $1.5 million into the match, and you might recall that on your tranche three is another million set to go to be appropriated to this matching account. But how it works, I'll briefly explain, Mr. Chairman. If you turn to page two, Mr. Chairman, on paragraph B, it talks about state treasurer shall invest amounts deposited with the Wyoming Public Television account in accordance with law. The investment earnings shall be credited to the general fund. So when we first invest in the fund, let's say we put the extra million in next July. That will, any interest off that will go to the general fund. It never actually benefits public television until a match comes in. And the matches have to accrue to amount to be $10,000. Once there's $10,000 in private, $10,000 in our appropriation, then flow to a matching funds account, which is talked about on page 3, Romanet 1. And this matching funds account then will start kicking out interest that will benefit Wyoming Public Television. So this is really a template for what we've done with other statutory matching accounts. We've set them up all like this. And the increments, as I mentioned, are $10,000. And so then it will sit there. It will be a statutory account. It says on page 4, Mr. Chairman, that the funds are inviolate. As we know, it's not a constitutional account, so they're inviolate unless you had 31 votes to change that, but generally we haven't done that, similar to other statutory trust accounts. So I would stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll call for the question. Beautiful. Thank you.
You've heard the motion on this. I'm sorry. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number SF-59 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
No.
Senate File 59 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 43 from Corporations Committee, an act relating to telecommunications, amending the Wyoming Telecommunications Act as specified, extending the Wyoming Telecommunications Act's sunset date, amending the authority of the Public Service Commission, amending regulatory authority over telecommunications companies deemed to be competitive, amending the operation of the Wyoming Universal Service Fund, providing an alternative distribution option for the Wyoming Universal Service Fund, establishing a benchmark price for essential local exchange services, providing standards for the review and alteration of the benchmark price, establishing a cap on additional expenditures related to the Wyoming Universal Service Fund, repealing and amending obsolete standards and language, amending language related to competitive carrier regulation, amending deadline relative to certificates of public convenience, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 43, engrossed Wyoming Telecommunications Act revisions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danz-Wanitzer, one excuse, Representative Gay, signed by Representative Danz-Wanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanisser?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass, and I'm very pleased to report there are no standing committee amendments in this bill. I am going to floor manage it. This has been a two-year interim study, interim work, really. And, ladies and gentlemen, you realize this is the third time in Wyoming history we revised the Telecom Act. First was in 1995, rewrote it in 2005, and here we are in 2015. And this time, instead of another 10-year, we're just going for 4. So what you'll see originally or initially on page 2 is this is only going to last us for the next 4 years until we have another rewrite. The 2016 Federal Telecom rewrite happens next year. There's a lot of uncertainty. I think we all understand how quickly telecommunications and the digital world is moving, and so we didn't want to wait 10 more years for the next rewrite. We're going to wait and see what the feds do next year, and then at least, if not before 2019, we'll be back to rewrite some of this. I'd be happy to read it line by line, but I'm just going to try to hit the high points over the next 10 minutes because it is such an important bill. We've worked on it every single committee meeting for 2 years, plus had 4 additional meetings in the interim to make sure all the stakeholders are on board. I am happy to report that this is a long, drawn-out compromise bill that has both industry, has the people who represent rural Wyomingites, has the people who represent retired persons in this state, and I think about every major company you could think of that you'd know the name of who does telecom in Wyoming is in support of the bill under currently written. So just walking you through it briefly, you'll see on page 2 that we do move the sunset to 2019. You'll see there on page 3 we have some outdated language on it being 3,000 hertz. We just don't have that problem anymore on voice grade access. Some of the big things, we're changing the date on line 23 of page 3 to 2015 is the new effective date for certificates of public convenience and necessity. I did check. We don't have anybody waiting before July to get one of these certificates. Moving on to page 4, and this is a big change that we're doing here for the first time. Right now, under Wyoming law, a telecommunications company can apply to be considered competitive. We're also going to allow the PSC, the Public Service Commission, to determine that a telecom company is competitive. And this triggers a whole lot of other statutes, but mainly for today's understanding, it doesn't. If you're competitive, you don't get USF funding, which is a subsidy provided to especially rural places in the state to help their phone service. And so while we're not allowing total deregulation in this bill, we are allowing it easier for phone service or telecom customers to be considered competitive. Moving on, you'll see just on page 5 that satellite providers can now provide telecom in today's day and age. And so they're under this. I'm just trying to hit the highlights and not go through all of my notes on this. But if anybody has any questions in any specific session, please come see me. The major thing you should see on page 6, even if a company becomes deregulated to be competitive, either through that company's petition or the PSC, they still have all wholesale tariffs, and the PSC still has enforcement actions on their rights, duties, or obligations. They're in Romanet 1 of Section H on page 6. You'll see moving on page 7, Romanet 2, that everything still has to stay in compliance with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. It trumps everything, even if a service is deregulated or named competitive. You'll see there on the bottom of page 7, trying to hurry through this, that even if you are deemed competitive, you still have to pay all of your fees. And so Romanet 1 there on lines 19 and 20, that's the Universal Service Fund charge. If you go on to page 8, Romanet 2, that would be the E911 charge we talked about previously in this body. Romanet 3, lines 5 and 6, that's your hearing impaired fees. And then Romanet 4, this is the mill levy that's assessed that funds the PSC. So it's anywhere between 0 to 3 mills. Right now it's roughly 2 on providers. And so that's how the PSC is felt, is funded. You'll see we have a whole lot of language we're moving on lines 9, or on pages 9 and the beginning of page 10. While this is really complicated, I think I can explain it pretty easy because this all deals with long distance. And even as in 2005, the last time we rewrote this, long-distance charges were going away. Many of you will remember, I guess even I kind of remember in my younger days, the long-distance used to be expensive, and you would have access charges that were really high. So your local company would contract with a national carrier, and the fees would be passed on to the consumer. And so every time you called long-distance, it was a much more expensive rate than calling locally. In today's day and age, long distance doesn't have any additional charges. We have phone numbers from anywhere, and you can't tell where someone's calling from just because of the area code and now. And so they anticipated this back in 2005. They said the transition had to be complete by 2010. That was done. By 2012, you'll see in the wording, it was no longer needed whatsoever. And so we can delete that whole section of law. Additionally, on page 11, that's just outdated housekeeping. We don't do that in the telecom world anymore. Anything on page 11... the big stuff you do need to know what we're moving forward with is on page 12, and this deals with the Universal Service Fund. This is the fund that collects money from everyone to pay for the hard-pressed areas of the state. I can read you the definition. USF, it's a cleanup throughout that page. If you're competitive, basically what this says, if you're competitive and you're deemed competitive either through the PSC or through your own petition, you don't get that USF. You're no longer allowed a subsidy if you're in a competitive area and a competitive carrier in the marketplace. And that goes all the way through page 13. The rest of page 13 in Romanet D is just an alternative means of distribution for the USF funding for those carriers who do need it. You will see the new language on page 14, subsection E, that this is under the new way we operate the Universal Service Fund. We're making sure there in Romanet 2 on page 14 that you can't have the fund get too large. And so we've established, I guess we would call it sideboards in this session, that we're taking the 2013-2014 average and making sure the fund can't go more than 125% of what it was in 2013-2014. So for making people pay into this, we're not just going to have this ever-increasing fund when your payouts aren't appropriate. And so we do put a maximum, and again, this does sunset in 2019, and so the testimony in committee and throughout the interim, there's really no belief that we're going to exceed 125% at this time, but we are putting a sideboard on just in case. There on page 15, this again sets up a new way, especially for the small telecom companies, to qualify for USF under their federal jurisdictional costs. It's what we call a loop cost. And it allows a new way for especially the small rural customers to pull from the Universal Service Fund. On page 16, a lot of new language as well. So you'll see in the beginning, up top of page 16, lines 1 through 5, these are the same costs that you file to the FCC as you do to the Public Service Commission. So it's just saying, you can't be telling the state regulatory agency one thing and the federal communications agency another. And then really, subsection H is all new language, but it targets the subsidy through a price benchmark. And so the Universal Service Fund benchmark, it's the price that rural customers are paying for their local phone service out of their pockets. And so under the current law and scheme we have, the PSC recalculates that every year, and it's set at 130% of the weighted statewide average price. And so when you take that into a number, that calculation, it gives you about a $30 within, a dollar as the actual amount. And so you're putting that price benchmark in a new system to be $30. It doesn't require now for the PSC to have to come back and reconfigure 130% of the weighted average every year if we're using that benchmark. And we all agree that that would be the right price benchmark at least to last for the next 4 years. And we may come and change it. And if there is a need, it can be changed there in Romanet H. And I think that's really, you'll see in Section 2 we're doing some repealers. The first repealer is over in the total service incremental cost. The second repealer is the video dial tone, which was something innovative, I think, 15, 20 years ago, but we don't do video dial tone anymore. And then 3715204D talks about the quality of service, and we just don't need that in today's day and age. All the telecom companies are way past that. Again, this becomes effective July 1st, 2015. I think I hopefully answered the major changes we're doing in the telecom rewrite, but if anybody does have any questions or wants to know what some of these terms or acronyms mean, I would be happy to talk about it.
Madam Majority Floor Leader. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This microphone works now. I'm just going to touch on some points that I think are pretty important with the revision of the Wyoming Telecommunication Act, or at least the most important for me. This takes the Wyoming Telecommunication Act and really kind of focuses it down on who can receive these subsidies and how these subsidies are received. If you'll look at page 12, towards the bottom of page 12 under subsection C, it talks about how the administration of the monies happens. It's got to be non-competitive, essential, local exchange services. And you switch the page over to 13, unless they fall under Wyoming Statute 3715202A, C, or D, and then they shall not be eligible for Universal Fund support under this article. So I think that's really important. And then back on page 4, upon petition, on subsection A under 3715202, a determination of competitive services. So in order to actually be deemed competitive, you've got to go through that process. Once you're deemed competitive, you're no longer going to receive that subsidy. And those competitive, that allows the local market to actually take place. And as lots of you know, throughout the state of Wyoming, there are areas where there is no competition. And that's it is really cost inhibitive to get service out to these folks. When you live 10 to 15 to 30 miles outside of town, it doesn't pay off very well over the long run, even at 20 to 30 bucks a month for one user. But that is a service that the state of Wyoming has said we will help provide. And I'm in support of this bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Swanser's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number SF43 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 43 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 54. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 54 from Corporations, an act relating to elections, providing definitions, clarifying and amending campaign reporting requirements, amending term limit provisions to comply with decisions of the Wyoming Supreme Court, conforming language to prior statutory changes, limiting distribution of the election code, requiring oaths as specified, amending notice of appointment provisions, amending time limits applicable to the acceptance of nominations, amending time limits for the delivery of absentee votes, amending absentee ballot formatting, altering obligations to initial ballots, acknowledging a canvassing board's ability to validate non-initialed ballots, amending provisions related to write-in candidates, making grammatical changes, specifying the official who prints names on ballots, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 54, engrossed election code revisions, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Dan Swanager, one excused, Representative Gay, signed by Representative Dan Swanager, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Swanager?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the committee of the whole rise to report it. Do so with a recommendation that Senate File 54 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will present this bill as well. It was a I think, a tiresome week for my committee last week, and so I get to run all the fund bills. Members of the 63rd, this is just the revision bill, and so those of you who've been here for a long time, this is just when we have the county clerks and the Secretary of State's office go through the election code every year and try to catch anything that we might have missed after an election cycle. These are things that are just supposed to be revisionary and general housekeeping. There are a couple of somewhat new things to add in the election code, but I don't think any of them are too out of left field, and this bill is designed to just be general revisions to keep current with law. So I'll quickly go through this as well. We do have a somewhat interesting change on page 3 at the top, where we have to define what an unsuccessful candidate is. And so this last election cycle, we had an incident in Sweetwater County. Someone was on the ballot, doesn't matter which office really, and they pulled out after the ballot had been printed. And after they'd pulled out of the primary election, they went on to be a write-in candidate and win the general election and are currently serving in that office. And so we came back and wanted to define what an unsuccessful candidate is, that if your name's in the ballot and you get at least one vote, this provides a statutory framework mechanism that doesn't allow you to become a candidate in the general election. You'll see all throughout this bill, and the reason it's so many pages is we are changing the word receipts to contributions. You can see it there on page 3 on lines 18 and 19. Basically, when you have the word receipts, we had lots of candidates thinking they had to provide actual receipts instead of a list of their contributions, and so it just clarifies that in the statutes. Other interesting things that we're revising include on page 8, you'll see we have some new language that says not more than 45 days. This is just to conform with the Federal MOVE Act, the military overseas voter, and so it has to be at least 45 days, no longer 40. We did have a conflict in the statute. You'll find on page 9, line 9, it says when initialed by a judge of the election, and that actually we changed that 14 years ago and they just didn't catch it in this section. That's not when it actually happens, and so we just cleaned that up. Similar language. They decided while we cleaned that up, we came up with a weird instance where somebody may forget, an election judge may forget to initial when they turn in the ballots. And so you'll see there on page 10, lines 7 and 8, it says, unless otherwise validated by a canvassing board pursuant, that's just a catch-all in case, you know, you turn in something and an election judge has forgot to initial the outside. It doesn't mean all those ballots are invalid. It just means someone forgot to initial, and so it's a cleanup in law. The rest are clarifying amendments. You'll see throughout the bill, with the exception of one more interesting thing on page 21, this last election cycle we had a certain statewide office, and because the statewide office holder was an incumbent, they had an incumbent election committee, a candidate campaign committee. And so although this incumbent was being challenged by several other people for that office, they were not required to submit an early January 1st campaign finance report. But the incumbent, having an incumbent campaign committee, like all of us do, those of you who are freshmen, you do have to file your campaign expenses next year in the off year of the election under the statute. And so it was kind of it was really a fairness issue that one candidate was singled out in this statewide race, that he had to provide all of his campaign finance information when the other two didn't. And so that was the only other big thing. On page 20 there, you'll see we took out federal law. We had a change in the statute in 2000 that federal PACs don't have to file in Wyoming, and it was just they've missed it in past years. The rest after page 21 is all just conforming amendments, especially with the receipts to contributions. And again, it should just be a housekeeping bill with a couple of interesting protections of what happened in the last election cycle. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on page 6 of the bill, the part that deals with the term limit for governor. I had in the back of my head that there was a lawsuit that ruled that the term limits were unconstitutional. So I guess I just wanted some clarification on that.
Chairman Zonovan, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly correct. You'll remember the former Secretary of State had to sue the Secretary of State here about 3 years ago, and so he won that lawsuit, and there no longer is a term limit on the offices of Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, Superintendent of Public Instruction. And so they've deleted those offices and just left the Office of Governor in. And I'd call for the question if there's no other questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative or Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number SF 54 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and the reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 17 from Senator Boothout, an act relating to public works and contracts, amending the preference for Wyoming materials as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, of Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 17, Resident Contractor Materials Preference, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee member...
Wait a minute. Let's go with the... We'd like to... I'll start all over. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 17 do pass, and there is a Committee of the Whole amendment that I would like to turn over to the good representative from Riverton.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if it pleases the Chairman, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17. And, folks, what this does on page 1 on line 14 is that we delete the word there, allow, and put, insert the word apply to make that language consistent with the rest of the document that we have there. And with that, I'd ask for a question.
We are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion back on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, members of the House, we've delved into the Preference Act a number of times over the last few years, and we'd kind of swore off it and swore a solemn oath that we wouldn't mess with it for a while. But as we always do, we find that there's a few corrections that need to be made. And in this instance, in the preference for materials, we had some language that took effect on July of this year that said that when that preference may be allowed, a 5% preference may be allowed for supplies, materials, agricultural products, equipment, machinery, and provisions as used in the construction of major maintenance, renovation, and renovation of the respective institutions. And what resulted of that was that it points out that the preference may be for construction, major maintenance, and renovation, but this is being interpreted by some of the state agencies that should be making the preference applicable around the state, not to include regular maintenance, and are applying the preference of equipment supplies used in regular maintenance, and they're not using preference to apply to equipment and supplies used in regular maintenance. And specifically, what this is coming down to is they're looking at regular maintenance, perhaps being highway maintenance, road maintenance, things of that nature that would require equipment. So dealerships around the state that sell equipment to state agencies or cities or municipalities are not being provided this preference that we really intended to have in place. And so this bill is requiring that they shall allow that 5% preference on regular maintenance as well. And then because that language in the bill refers, it's kind of long and convoluted language that continues over and over again to say materials, agricultural products, equipment, machinery, that we've changed the definition there to include all of those things. And so wherever you see materials that's in reference to that, and then we've kind of taken and just succinctly outlined what the requirements of this preference requirement is to the boards and to the person acting and to the counties, and again is what preference means. But the problem came forward as a result of the state and counties and municipalities not looking at equipment as something that preference would have to be allowed for. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That the explainer of this said that this is a kind of a cleanup of but it all, I think he also said that there's instead of being permissive, now it's a direct shall be. And I'm just wondering if the committee, when they discussed this, talked about the cost to state governments and the cost to cities and counties by this is essentially putting on a tariff to protect certain suppliers of these materials. And, you know, I don't maybe other states are doing it and we're retaliating or something. But it's bad policy. It causes budgets to go up, including the state budget. And it causes local budgets to go up because of this protectionism we've got here. And when you put this new language in, it looks to me like it's going to be more coercive now than it ever was before. And I guess I'd like to talk about that. What is the wisdom of doing something like this?
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the bringer of the bill to explain something that's on between page 3 and page 4, excuse me, 2 and 3, Romanet 3, I guess you'd call it. And this is where we went from a one standard, i.e. produced, manufactured, or grown in the state, and now we have a two standard, because on line 2 we added an or. And or says, first we go with the produced, manufactured, and grown, and then or a resident of the state can get it to us. That could come from anywhere. So I guess I'm curious about that component where we went from one standard, i.e. preference for Wyoming things, to a second, to now adding another standard that just says a resident can import it from anywhere they want and still get this preference. And that's the way I read it. If I'm incorrect in that, I'd like to be clarified, but I think this is not just a simple change. This is actually a significant step in a different direction. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I may, I'll answer those first questions. And first to the Chairman of Revenue's question on what we should do. We've addressed this Preference Act for, and it goes back to the money that we spend in the construction. We use state severance and tax dollars to build state facilities, to build buildings within the state, and the consensus at this body over the last period of time is that we would prefer to have these buildings and these products and these supplies come from Wyoming suppliers, Wyoming contractors, Wyoming builders. Now, do other states do a preference? Yes. And do we do a preference? Yes. We do it on construction, and we're doing it on materials, and we're saying that, and we even had that discussion on the building of all the new schools that we've had around the state, that we would, if we're going to spend Wyoming money on this, we ought to be using Wyoming labor, and we ought to be using Wyoming businesses to do it. And to, it's not uncommon in other states, and even within some sovereign jurisdictions within the state, that's a 10% margin. And so I think that members of this body could certainly have their opinion, but I think that it is certainly a valid and a valid point that we take to try and ensure that the money that we use to build these buildings in the state don't all leave and go north, south, east, or west. Now, to the second question regarding the suppliers, and he is correct that this addresses anybody that is a supplier of materials within the state. If you're a supplier of materials within, so then if you're a supplier of materials within the state and you're bidding on supplying, whether it be lumber or concrete or widgets or whatever the case may be, for a state-funded project, that you would be given this 5% preference over a similar supplier in an out-of-state market.
Chairman Lockhart. Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just comment on the two other comments beforehand, and it, you know, all preferences are a tariff of some nature as it was categorized. I mean, they just are. They create an imbalance in the open market, and we have had our preference laws in place now for many years. We reworked them significantly about 3 or 4 years ago. And that's a policy decision that we felt was good for the state of Wyoming, especially given the amount of capital construction we'd been doing during the, I guess it's been referred to as the Great Recession, and for numerous benefits. And I can go through them, but I don't think there's any reason. This issue came up, and what we run into are not so much the day-to-day items, but are on these mid-range purchases, vehicles, snow plows, plowing equipment, some of these other types of items. And the fact of the matter is it's a policy decision of whether or not we're going to go ahead and allow a preference to buy those mid-range items, $30,000 to $120,000 or whatever, they might even be more than that. If we're going to do that, to buy them from local suppliers, local dealers, rather than buy them from the lowest bidder from out of state, which may not be able to service those. And that was the reason for this Senate file being drafted and brought forward. And to answer the representative from Campbell County is, yes, that was included, to look at suppliers. So if you're a local business and as part of your business is to sell these items that go into the regular maintenance, then that preference can be afforded when these items go out for bid. I don't disagree with anything that was said by the other two speakers. They're absolutely right. This is a policy decision that we need to make to say, hey, there are those businesses out there that are supplying these services to our public institutions, and are we going to encourage that we're buying those from locals, or are we going to let them go ahead and try to compete on a more regional view? Again, we've said with contractors and construction and major maintenance that we want to encourage this spending of our state dollars to go towards our state residents. So that's why this was brought.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That leads me into the next question, because the last speaker was talking about state dollars. And what I'm seeing here on line 11 on page 2, that we're not only using state or guiding state dollars into this tariff arrangement, but it sounds to me like with C, it's every county, municipality, school district, and community college district, we are coercing them, regardless whether they're spending our money or their own money, but we're saying that they have to abide by this thing too. Now, what kind of a precedent is that?
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, it's a precedent we already have. When a county, city, or municipality goes out with any type of construction project or major maintenance, they're bound by the same preference laws and rules as the state of Wyoming. That was part of the cleanup we did 3 years ago, was to make everything uniform so that we didn't have any differing preferences between the counties, municipalities, I think the chairman of appropriations has said it. When we go home, we try to forget some of this. And I forgot the name of those cases, but one of them had come out of Sweetwater County dealing with local preferences. We tried to make all that uniform. So you know, it is an expansion. I'm not saying that. It is an expansion to these other items. And these other items, vehicles, come to mind on a lot of these things. So, but I think it is, brings a consistency to it. So.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question. I know when we were talking about the resident contractors a few years ago that there was some talk that it would actually box in our contractors. So when they went to out of state and trying to do contracts, that the states were talking about if our state had a law, then they would give a 5% preference to their state. And so my question is, did that actually come to fruition, and does that have any effect on the materials? Is there some states that have those laws in effect that if we do one, then they're going to reciprocate and kind of box our contractors and our supply people out?
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier this fall, I was visiting with one of the major equipment dealers in the state that up there in the county that's closest to our heart, and they were saying that the way our statute was currently written, that 5% may be applied, really puts them at a disadvantage, because when they bid on projects out of state, that those preferences in out of states in other states already do exist, and then the biggest department that we have that takes care of most of the states' highways voiced in an email that one of the problems is by just taking the low bid, which may be from one of the coastal states, it could be from a Gulf state, it could be anywhere, is then you run into the trouble of getting service and warranty work and warranty parts to cover, particularly on equipment that was worrisome to them. So they were supportive of, they too are supportive of this. Once again, would just go back and remind the body that these are public funds. They're state funds. They're public funds, and these are public. We ought to be supporting those industries in the state that provide, that are here to take care of construction and provide the needs for the industries around here. And I don't think that this preference is out of line, nor is it foreign to the rest of the country. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment, because I came up here when the first question was asked, why are we doing this? And I think it's the temper of the people in Wyoming. They like Wyoming products. They like Wyoming employees. They like Wyoming businesses to be successful. And so we're giving a slight edge to those people. And when you hear the testimony like we did multiple times and over multiple years, actually it works out more economic for the purchaser of this to have somebody local. Because if something breaks down or if they don't have enough of it, those kinds of replacements come much quicker from a local Wyoming business. So I think it's a good bill to have, and I think it's been appreciated by our state. And it's one that we've worked on for a number of years.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, this is important for Wyoming, especially the interior of Wyoming, where we need our local suppliers to have the support of these larger contracts, get this preference. It's a small amount, but, you know, if it doesn't do a heck of a lot, but maybe it keeps a couple more businesses open in the state to where we don't have to go out of state for everything.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Senate File Number 17 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 17 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 65. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 65 from Senator Kinski, an act relating to banking, specifying how provisions related to savings and loan associations apply to mutual savings and loan associations, revising specified duties of the State Banking Commissioner, repealing provisions related to the Office of Supervision, providing a definition and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom referred Senate File 65 engrossed, Savings and Loan Associations, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walter, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 65 do pass. I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the adjunct Minerals Committee member and also chair of our Revenue Committee.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a real simple bill, okay? It really is. It does two things. It allows mutual savings and loan associations to be dual, have the ability for a dual choice on charters. And the other thing it does is remove some archaic language that doesn't apply anymore. So let me give you the background of what's behind all of this. We have lots of different organization apparatus for financial institutions. We have savings and loan banks that are owned by stockholders, and they're not mutual in nature, and we have commercial banks, among others. And both of these, the statute that we've been going on for years is capable of allowing savings and loan banks that are stockholder-owned and commercial banks to move from one charter to another. In other words, they could be federally chartered, and they may wish to go to a state charter, or they may be state chartered, and they have to, and they may wish to go to a federal charter. In whichever place they're going, there's conditions that either the state or the federal chartering organization, the Federal Reserve, or whoever's in charge, that you have to abide by it or else they won't accept you, okay? Now, the difference is that we do have some what we call mutual savings and loan associations, all right? The mutual alerts you to the fact that it's not owned by stockholders technically, but it's owned by the depositors and the borrowers of this savings and loan, all right? And that's what we call a mutual savings and loan, and we have two of them in the northern part of the state, one in the Bighorn Basin and the other one on the other side of the Bighorn Basin. But anyway, there was an inquiry this summer that said, you know, how come we're treated differently? And I guess the only reason they were treated differently was because nobody thought of it. And so that's what the real purpose of this was. Now, working with the commissioner who deals with these kind of things, he says, as long as we're going to do a bill like this, let's clean up some language that doesn't apply anymore. And I'll show you that as we move through very quickly. But anyway, the definitions on page 2 defines what mutual savings and loan association means, just like I said. It also points out, now that we're talking about mutual savings and loans, over on page 3, it just says that the initial capital has to be on par and the same for this kind of a mutual savings and loan as it is for any other savings and loan as well. Okay? Now, the enabling legislation that will allow these mutual savings and loan associations to seek a state charter if they want it is found on page 4. It says, where you go to line number 2, it says, any association organized under the laws of the state including a mutual savings and loan association, may reorganize the association and provide for carrying on its business under the laws of the state, i.e. a state charter. Okay? Now, that's about all the of the first part of the bill. The rest of the bill, you go to page 5, they talk about the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Office of Thrift Supervision. I learned in committee the other day there is no such thing as the Office of Thrift Supervision. And they want to change this to a more generic name, so every time the federal government passes another banking law and changes the name of something, then we don't have to change our statutes to mirror that. So you can see what they're doing if you look look through that. Then there is one on top of page 6, any state savings and loan association, including mutual savings and loan association, is eligible to become a federal savings and loan association, may convert itself into a federal savings and loan association by the following procedures. And these are the same procedures that is used by that commission right now. Okay, so basically that is it. If you go, you know, here and there, there's archaic language is taken out, replaced with the appropriate generic language. And the only thing that's different is on page 11, where we update, this is on the top of page 11, we update it to reflect what's really done. This is some old archaic language where we talk about where the commissioner reports to the governor, and this isn't the way it's done anymore. And it's just been that way for a long time. So that's the bill, and if there's no questions, I guess I'll call for the question. You can vote on it, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 65, SF-65, do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 65 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 97. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 97 from Senator Meyer, an act relating to telecommunications, specifying that the Department of Transportation shall lease communications facilities to telecommunications companies if determined by the Public Service Commission as specified, providing rulemaking authority, directing the deposit of funds, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 97 engrossed, Department of Transportation and Communications Facilities, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, and Davis Wanitzer. Those who voted no, Representative Laux, Readers, and Walter, signed by Representative Davis Wanitzer, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Wanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 97 do pass. There are no amendments, and for the floor explanation of the bill, I'm going to turn it over to the representative from District 5, Representative Steinmetz.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you'll refer to your bill on page 2, it's pretty self-explanatory. Upon application by a telecommunications company, if the Public Service Commission determines that it's necessary to provide telecommunications service to an underserved area of the state, the Wyoming Department of Transportation shall lease excess capacity on any communication infrastructure facility owned by the Department of Transportation. And so that's basically what we're doing, allowing for excess capacity to be used by a private company. And it would have to be under the condition that there is no private or commercial communication facility open for business there. So that's the bill, and I would urge your aye vote and stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Brockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick question on this. The Department of Transportation put up, I believe, erected 54 towers that were for a statewide emergency communication system. Does this bill include leasing those towers and some of their capabilities to public communication?
Representative Steinmetz.
I believe that it does, and that's why we were going to do this bill to allow those to be used if they have excess capacity.
Sorry. Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also point out, in support of this bill, it's for those areas that are underserved, like the carriers don't have anything. North of where I live in Sweetwater County, there's a rural health center. They've been fighting real hard to find a tower that might be tall enough to get a signal so they can communicate with the hospital right here. It may help them out, it may not, but it's just for an underserved area. If the tower can handle the extra antennas or anything, then YDOT could lease those out.
Representative Alex.
Mr. Chairman. It was pointed out during in testimony on this that Department of Transportation has some agreements with people they've done on their own without this, one. And two, I still don't understand why the Public Service Commission needs to be involved in this, and that never was answered. So, and also to put a little caveat on the bringer of the bill wasn't able to be there either, so I don't know if the question could have been answered, but it sure wasn't in our committee meeting. Thank you. I'm voting no.
Chairman Zornitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to why the FCC has to be there, they're the ones that control the radio waves themselves in different areas, so they don't want, they're the ones that control the competition end of the radio waves, so you need to go through them to make sure that you're not trying to put a tower in some place that is fully covered. And what was the first question that I missed? And the other thing, I guess, is that you want to be aware of is that the FCC actually requires co-location when possible. So the state is basically a state entity and not a commercial entity. So they have a problem just going with two commercials. So when you get those two together, I believe that would be why you'd want the FCC involved.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my concern with this bill is, and I don't know if it was addressed in committee is or not, but there's a number of private entities that have worked very hard and spent a lot of their money trying to create connectivity in some of these rural locations. And was there any testimony about whether or not this is they feel that this is unfair as far as giving their competitor an advantage when they've spent a lot of their own money trying to create this connectivity, even though there are some spots that we don't have it still?
Chairman Swanister. Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was no testimony. We had telecommunication companies up there. Like I say before, it's just for an area that is unserved by the companies you just referenced. So, and I believe that's why the Public Service Commission is in there, too. So they know the coverage that these carriers have. So it would be just an area that is underserved. Thank you.
Chairman Swanister.
Oh, thank you. I thought Representative Blake was had a question. But realize if a telecommunications company is wanting to come in that area, it makes absolutely no sense to build a tower a half a mile away or a quarter of a mile away from one already exists. And the fact that they do not have to build a tower might be the part of the equation they need to make it profitable to put those telecommunication waves in a particular area. So be aware, but it can only be if there is a strong enough tower that's tall enough that meets all the requirements that telecommunications company would need, and obviously would have to meet with FCC approval. So it's not going to influence a lot of towers in the state, but it will influence a couple of those places that are not able to get
service, and they can look out their back doors and see towers, and they're like, why in the world aren't we putting something right here? I got a tower in my backyard, yet I cannot get reception, and we're trying to solve some of those problems.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 97 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate File 97 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 111. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 111 from Senator Perkins, an act relating to the Wyoming Probate Court, providing requirements and procedures for distribution of property by affidavit and summary procedures for distribution of property, providing a definition, providing legislative findings, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 111 and Gross Summary Probate Proceedings, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 111 do pass. There's no standing committee amendments, but there is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and it's just a correction. On page 3, line 4, it changes distributes to distributees, and so I would ask for the vote, the ayes for that right now.
We are in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Any other discussion? Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Greer will explain the bill.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be as brief as you would like or as detailed as you would like. So, the overview is that our probate process in Wyoming has two components. One is a full-blown probate, 9-month procedure at a minimum, or the other is a summary probate process, which are for estates that are under $200,000. And so maybe the best way to look at this is when we have an estate under $200,000, there are two mechanisms to transfer a decedent's assets either to his spouse or down to his heirs. And a year ago, we looked at this statute from the standpoint of this process had a couple flaws in it. And one of them is there was no way for a creditor to object. So the sponsor of this bill and myself had brought a bill last year to address this issue for a creditor to make a claim against an estate going through the summary process. Well, in the course of that, we realized there were several other problems. And so we went through and worked this through the summer to bring what's in front of you. And the things that we're addressing is that when you have an estate that's under $200,000, you have two processes. If it's personal property, you can do an affidavit process that simply gets that transferred over. If it's real property, the second process is an application to the court for a decree of distribution and requires a little bit more publication, notification, and so forth. One of the things we were running into was because our statute initially, or as it exists, was brief, I guess. There had been different interpretations through the circuits or through the districts in Wyoming. And so what we sought to do was we put together all the questions, all the different things that we saw happen in the state of Wyoming and addressed it in this Senate file.
And one that we found was that rather than having to have all of the proposed distributees sign the affidavit, we could have one representative. Then once that's filed, there's a notice that is run in the newspaper. Also, under the probate code, U.S. Supreme Court decision, you need to send notice to the known creditors or creditors that are reasonably ascertained. So if you're checking the decedent's mail and there's a bill from somebody, you need to send them a notice that there is a debt owed out there. And then we have a time frame of 30 days in which to file an objection to that and then deal with those creditors. One of the other things that we were looking at were issues that come up with mineral interests, in particular where we have several generations where the mineral interests were such a nominal amount, so fractionalized that no one took care of them in grandpa's estate. But now all of a sudden somebody's looking at them because they want to lease them and maybe produce them. So this gave us a mechanism to go across a couple generations to clean those up. Another issue that came up was the fact there was no mechanism here to make notification to a surviving spouse of his or her elective share. And there's actually a ruling here in this county from a district court saying that the statute's unconstitutional because we aren't giving notice to a surviving spouse. So we've included that provision. The other items that we cleaned up with are on the first two pages, actually. And what we did was copy from our probate code the filing location for the decedent and also so the venue for the decedent. Because we've simplified the process so one distributee can file the application on behalf of the class of distributees, we may run into this situation where we have a missing distributee. And you'll see that on page 2 in the new section 2-1-207. Which gives us a mechanism. If it's an interest in real property, the court can go ahead and order it goes into the name of that missing distributee. But if it's personal property, it's a little difficult. So what we've got is a mechanism to reduce that to money, and then it would to cash, and then it would go ahead and be turned over to the lost property to the treasurer's office here. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. The unclaimed property falls under the Unclaimed Property Act. So I think with that, unless you want me to walk you all the way through the bill, I'll just stand back and answer any questions to the extent I can do so.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Senate File 111 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 111 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 120. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 120 from Senator Ross, an act relating to the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, incorporating the 2008 amendments proposed by the Uniform Laws Commission, amending and creating definitions, clarifying procedures, providing for recognition, registration, and cooperation in issuing, modifying, and enforcement of family support children involving parties that live in foreign countries as specified, providing for applicability of the Act, providing for severability of provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, to whom is referred Senate File 120 engrossed, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that a do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters, and one no vote, Representative Halverson, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 120 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. This amendment is very simple. It just renumbers and changes some ands and ors, and the final change is it changes the it strikes the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act on page 61, line 1, and inserts this act instead. So all minor changes, so I'll call for the aye vote.
Representative Nicholas?
No.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll also move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. It's some further corrections provided by staff, changing person to personal, deleting an on and inserting an in, and deleting or political subdivision. So I'll call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment also.
I also want to state that the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 did pass, and we're back on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Amendment is adopted. Is there any we're back on the bill, Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Nicholas will explain the bill.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Senate. I would move Senate File number 120 as amended. This is the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. This does several different things, but basically it's a compendium of modifications to the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, which we in Wyoming adopted in 2005. And since then, from 2008 up until now, the Uniform Laws Division have gone through and modified this various times. It's gone through lots and lots of kind of annual regurgitations on what to do. But in addition to that, what this does primarily is it allows a mechanism to enforce child custody and support internationally into foreign jurisdictions. And in order to do that, and it's due to go to the 84 nations that have been that all have opted in to the Hague Convention, it's required that each state of all 50 states adopt this in order to then implement it through the Hague Convention. And there's some negative impacts if we don't adopt it. One of that is we, as Wyoming, will lose TANF funds. That's roughly $13 million for temporary assistance for needy families with children. And so, I went on the Internet. This is one of those big, fat bills. And that, you might recall earlier in the session, I kind of got up and protested big, fat bills if you don't totally understand them. And so now I'm eating a little bit of cake. But I did go through the bill. I went through the Internet, and I have found no entities that are opposed to this in terms of support family institutions. The ABA is in support of it. The National Judicial Conferences are in support of it. The State Convention of Judges are for it. And I couldn't find anything, at least in my search, of folks that are opposed to it because of some type of federalism and world points of view. Basically, it allows us to enforce child support obligations in foreign nations. And I was worried that we might have some folks in foreign nations bring support orders here that we disagree with, that are inconsistent with our laws of the United States. And in those situations, there are provisos in here that says if the law is unjust or inconsistent with our laws, then a state court can actually reject those demands from a foreign nation if for some reason there's something that simply doesn't comply with our basic requirements and state laws. So with that, I think it's pretty simple that... And without going into the full description of it, and I'm not sure I can, I would move for your support of the bill. And call for the question if there aren't any questions.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the no vote in committee, and what alarmed me was just the fact that this is putting Wyoming into alignment with an international law. Now, we've had a lot of conforming uniform bills this session. We've given up the Wyoming bar exam to go for an ABA exam. We've gone to uniform truck lengths so that the big rigs can get through Wyoming. And this is called an Interstate Family Support Act, but it really is international. And this is what alarmed me. I'm somewhat heartened hearing the good representative's explanation. And I wonder, though, when he says if a state court finds that an international rule is detrimental, that the state can overrule that international law, and I just find that hard to believe. I'm sure it's true. It's just Wyoming going up against The Hague. I don't think we're going to come out ahead. If we do, if somehow Wyoming would prevail, Mr. Chairman, do we risk losing those temporary assistance to needy family funds? This is, you know, we've heard for years about, and then there have even been bills in this body and other states saying, we will not be subjected to any international laws. And it seemed really far-fetched, but then here it is. We are asking Wyoming to conform with child custody, child support laws from an international court. And I would just ask us to be a little careful. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. And just to respond, because I don't see anyone else jumping up. You know, we have a hard time enforcing, even though our laws are consistent, if you have a decree from a southern state and you bring it up here and try to enforce it, it's not an easy thing to do. And there are lots of ways that I mean, I fought those battles long ago when I did some of this law to try to enforce different laws from other states. And so trust me, if there's an inconsistency in foreign laws that the local state court, and by the way, these are all state court judges. They're not, federal courts don't really deal on this. It's all state court based. And so you're enforcing a state court either in a foreign country or a foreign country state, enforcing it in state court here. And I can just tell you that my experience is that state courts are very open-minded about enforcing laws in a way that's appropriate with state law as opposed to foreign law. And they use broad language in this to make sure that that our states, I think, our hands are not tied. And on the other hand, it's kind of like if we don't do this, then we're giving up $13 million annually for temporary assist for needy family children. And like, I've looked for instances where folks said that this is a bad idea, and I just haven't found it. So I ask for your support.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 120 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate file 120 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 82. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 82 from Senator Scott, an act relating to the Funeral Service Practitioners Act, amending a definition, clarifying the functions of funeral directors, clarifying the separation of licenses and permits, clarifying the ability of the board to require certification to operate a crematory or chemical disposition facility, clarifying the extent to which an unlicensed person may assist in the operation of a crematory or chemical disposition facility, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred Senate File 82, Engrossed Funeral Services Practitioners Act Amendments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, and Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill, or that Senate file number 82 do pass, and there are no amendments, and to explain everything there is about this bill, we'll have Representative Petroff talk about it.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year, interim before last, the Corporations Committee did a complete rewrite of the Funeral Practitioner Act. It was, I think, a 90-something page bill. It was a giant bill. And so there were a few things that we got a little bit wrong that we're just trying to clarify. And the first main thing that we're clarifying is what a non-licensed employee or an apprentice can and cannot do. And then the second thing we're trying to do is to change some language to make sure that we grandfather current funeral directors from having to meet the new requirements. That was our intention. We just didn't quite meet that the last time around. And so that's really what page two is about, is adding to the definition of funeral director to make sure they can do things that they can currently do. On page three, we're talking about things that that people who are not licensed can and cannot do, and we're basically adding that they can do things that we're going to talk about on page five and six. At the bottom of page three, it deals with licenses and permits, but the language in the statute only refers to licenses, so we've added permits throughout that section. On page four, we're talking about who's allowed in an embalming room, and we've added apprentices to who's allowed in an embalming room. The apprentices are defined in the original big statute. That was just inadvertently left out. On page five, most of page five is dealing with what an unlicensed person can and cannot do. So an unlicensed person is able to assist in the operation of a crematory or chemical disposition facility. They have to be directed by a funeral service practitioner. And then the important part is on lines 18 and 19, they shall not handle human remains or open a closed cremation container. So we want somebody who's trained and licensed to actually be handling any bodies. On page six, we're talking about, same section talking about what people can and can't do, and also adding that the board may waive or extend the time to complete certification due to hardship or difficulty in completing the required certification program. And what we're really trying to address there is, you know, if somebody is licensed and it's a family operation and there's a, you know, somebody is lost in the family who's that licensed person, that we're going to give time for the family to get that certification. So with that, I'll stand for any questions. If there are no questions, I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that SF 82 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate file 82 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
28th day of the session. Mr. Speaker, a committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begged to leave report as follows. Senate File 84, amended. Representative Stubson announced a conflict of interest on Senate File 84, but it is recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. Senate File 59, recommended do pass. Senate File 43, recommended do pass. Senate File 54, recommended do pass. Senate File 17, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 65, recommended do pass. Senate File 97, recommended do pass. Senate File 111, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 120, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 82, recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Jennings, Chairman.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Jennings. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 279. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 63, Predator Ownership. The Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 13, noes 17. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 280. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 46, Fire Misdemeanors. The Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 30. The Senate requests the House to appoint a conference committee number 1, meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 281. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 117, Air Quality Construction Permitting. Ayes 30, noes 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 282. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 102, Medical Billing, Provisional Providers. Ayes 30, noes 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 283. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendment to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 35, Security Breach Notification. Ayes 29, 1, no. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 284. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendment to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 36, Personal Identifying Information Definitions. Ayes 30, noes 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 285. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections. House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, which was ayes 24, noes 6. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 286. Mr. Speaker, the Senate appointed Senate conferees to meet with the right committee number 1 from the House on amendments to Senate File 46. The state conferees are Senator Christensen, Chairman, Senator Burns, and Senator Meyer. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 287. Mr. Speaker, the Senate appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the House on amendments to Senate File 63. The Senate conferees are Senator Anderson, that's J.D. Anderson, as Chairman, Senator Hicks, and Senator Perkins. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Standing committee report. Committee number 2 on appropriations has reviewed Senate File 1 pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1E 1 and 2. The following lists are available and provided, and it is signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, the committee number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 11 and Grow, is selling to junk dealers ID required. Respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 100 engrossed Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Amendments, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 124, engrossed Sales and Use Tax Informants, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, Wilson, and one no vote, Representative Jennings, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom have referred Senate File 47, City Engineers, duty to estimate project cost, respectfully report saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Baxton, Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 132 engrossed Wyoming Fair Housing Act, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Danswanitzer, two no votes, Representatives Blackburn and Jennings, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 142 engrossed Building Code Regulation, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I've had my nose in a rule book half of the afternoon. I want to explain what our procedure here is. On House Bill 1, the budget bill, it has been read back in by the reading clerk. So it's now back before the House. And we're on, if anybody cares, we're on page 63 and 64 of the joint rules. But here's the procedure. Once it's back in, then the bill is on third reading. And the third reading amendments that we're considering are the Senate amendments. They're considering the House amendments. We're considering the Senate amendments. We're going to have an explanation from the chairman of appropriations or a member of his committee if he designates somebody else. We're going to have an explanation of the Senate amendments to House Bill 1. And then we don't vote on third reading. After they have been explained, then the bill will be, it says it shall not be sent back to the House of Origin for concurrence. Rather, the mere budget bill will be immediately referred to the Joint Conference Committee appointed by the presiding officers of the House. So I will appoint that conference committee. So at this point, the bill is back in the House, or the amendments are in the House, and Chairman Harshman will explain those amendments, and I think you have some handouts. I'll let him take it from there. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are two handouts. I think the main one is, it looks like a detailed summary sheet again. It's a little different, but we'll
If you could find that, it hit your desk about 10 minutes ago. These are only Senate-adopted amendments. Okay, so you get to take a look at what they did to the mere budget bill. And then this is broken into three parts. It'll start with identical amendments, things where a member of this body and a member of the Senate made identical amendments that were successful. And so we'll cover the identical amendments first, and then we'll go to, you could say similar or maybe better might be related amendments, because some of them are kind of related to the same issue, but they're not very similar. And then there are differing amendments, and that'll be last. And so we'll go through these just one by one. And so you can see on your detailed summary sheet of Senate amendments, you can, the first column on your left is Senate amendment number. And then you can see the senator who sponsored it. And then in this third column, House Mirror, because these are the identicals. And then you can see the House sponsor, and then we'll go into the rest of the amendment. Okay, so Mr. Speaker, the first page then are identicals. And the first identical is Senate 2, Amendment number 32. And this deals with our expanded foreign trade efforts. You can see where Representative Madam Majority Floor Leader in the House had an identical amendment for $35,000 to the governor's office. Now, why you see, just for explanation piece, you actually see the very first one is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 1 by a senator with an R on his name, and then you see a line through it. It's because the Senate amendment that follows that is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 32 deleted his amendment and then mirrored up with the House Second Reading Amendment number 20. So the Senate took two amendments to get to the one amendment that the House adopted. That's how that worked on the very first one. There are a few like that, but not many. But you'll see some, there's three or four amendments to get to where the other House went or close to the other House. So at this same time now, our counterparts down the hall have a similar sheet, but only of our House amendments. So they're looking at all of our House amendments and how they fit in, but in the same order as identicals. So that's the first one, is the $35,000 for foreign trade efforts. The second issue is with Senate Second Reading Amendment number 14, and that deals with school foundation payments to the Yellowstone Park kids who were taken over by one of our school districts, so they don't have to wait till the end of the school year. Similar to what we do with all of our school districts on a 90-day enrollment count, they'll get their reimbursement a little sooner. So those are identical. The next one is deals with it's Senate Second Reading number 19, mirrored up in here on municipal solid waste on the new list. So remove the language that referred to Senate File 43, described a project list that was obsolete with the passage of Senate File 25, and so it deals with that new priority list. So the next is Senate Second Reading number 20. That mirrors up with the value-added energy plan, particularly with the integrated test center and how that can be not necessarily at the same site and can be, but it all deals with demonstration projects for CO2. So those mirrored up. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 25, and that mirrored up with House Second Reading 43, and you can see that deals with the contingent earnings in 2015 and 2016, and that swapped $5 million from 16 community colleges match, moved it up into the 15 contingent, and moved $5 million from the University of Wyoming unconventional oil and gas research to the 16 contingency. So we did that swap of $5 million on those matching funds. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 37, which mirrored up on requiring a report on the mother-child program at the Women's Center by next November. Next identical amendment is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 6, which mirrored up House Second Reading 21, and that deleted the university study the feasibility of creating a four-year program in Jackson. Next is Senate third reading number 8, and that mirrored with House second and House third 3026. I said that wrong. House third reading amendment number 26. This is an example where it took the House two times to get to the Senate position, and it was on the ECA issue, and you might remember on third reading where we reduced the cost, and it mirrors up now with the Senate, and you can see the $5,948,000 of school foundation funds. The next identical amendment is Senate third reading number 13, which mirrored up in with House third reading 36, which modified the language in section 347, clarifies the requirement for the appraisal, and it removed us from the authorization because some of this is going to occur when we're gone this summer, is my understanding now, on one of those properties. And so we adopted that amendment in the House as well as the Senate. And the next one here is the technical corrections. And you might recall that I ran an amendment on third reading that corrected some misspellings, some words that didn't need to be there. The chairman of Senate Appropriations ran an identical amendment. So that is technical corrections. Flipping over to page 2 of your detailed summary sheet.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nicholas.
Yeah, could you help explain then what the Joint Conference Committee can do with the identical amendments so that I think that'll help?
Sure. Well,
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And so the process on identical amendments is that issue is over. So we will not discuss. We will discuss where we'll adopt one side or the other. You know, we'll adopt Senate amendments or House amendments. Many times, I didn't even count, frankly, but if there's, looks like about 10 amendments, the first 5 we might adopt Senate, the next 5 we adopt the House amendments, and then that'll be the first action that we'll take. And just to tell you, we'll announce this, but I think we're going to meet tomorrow at 12:30. It'll be the first Joint Conference Committee on the Budget in room 204, and as by our rules, the Senate chairman will be the chair tomorrow for the Joint Conference Committee. So thank you for that question. And this is like any third reading. You can speak 2 times to any issue. And so if any of these you have questions about, just stand up and the speaker will recognize you. And I'll certainly stop and we'll try to answer your questions. Okay, so now, Mr. Speaker, I'm on page 2. And so these are related items. Okay, so some of these are real similar, some not very similar, and it might just be a related type issue. The next is, so the first one on related issues is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 7, and you can see it's similar to the House Second Reading number 52 by our Chairwoman of Health and Labor. And it talks about reimbursements to our mental health care services. The difference, I believe, in the House amendment, we left out the term tobacco funds, where the Senate has general funds and tobacco funds. The next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 15, and it's, again, a little bit different than the one than House Third Reading 33 adopted, and requires the Department of Education to report on possible methods to incentivize completion of the success curricula with these advanced placement courses and international baccalaureate courses. There's a little bit of different wording on that. But they're very close. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 17. And you might recall that we had 2 amendments on court security funding for 1 county that was left out and then decided they did in fact want to join in. And you can see the Senate amendment takes $83,422 in general fund, and that was our position on second reading amendment. But what we did on third reading amendment was come back and take that $83,000 out of SLIB capital construction grants And so that's the total amount. There was a little bit of money left in that $3 million that was sitting out there from a veto last year. And so what we've basically funded out of those SLIB Capcon or SLIB grants are $2 million to fund the passing lanes, and then this $1 million and what would be $83,000 that we grabbed back into that account some more. So that's our differences there. Just the funding source, the same issue, the same county. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment 18, Division 1. And you can see we have two amendments that they're very similar. It modifies the Department of Health Facilities Task Force with change to membership, more legislative members, less executive branch members. And the real difference is in a little bit of language on options on the retirement center. They both deal with it, but they're just a little, they're not identical, so we're going to have to iron out that issue on. But again, very similar. Next amendment is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 4, and you can see it is very similar to our House Second Reading Amendment number 35. It's just where they took the $200,000 for the aging division for additional funding for home services program. Now, we actually appropriated $200,000 general fund. They went in the director's office and just took $200,000 out of the director's office, and so it did not affect the budget. And so you can see the negative sign around the Senate amendment. Next is, so we're going to have, you know, we'll figure that one out, but the issue is in there, and it's how we're going to pay for it. Next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 19, Division 1, and it's similar. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. It's the issue is about studying funding of our community colleges, and our House amendment that we adopted on third reading, amendment number 39, directed the Joint Appropriations Committee and really the Community College Commission to come back with some proposals to us. We're going to work it in the interim and try to decide and work through some kind of funding formula. What the Senate amendment really lets the Appropriations Committee look at it and then decide if we should move towards a different funding model. So it's a little different, and I think so we'll have probably a pretty good discussion about that. Hard to tell where that would end up. We kind of take two different approaches to the issue. But it's a similar issue. Next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 21. And really, the only, and you can see there are actually three House amendments. And the real difference is House Third Reading Amendment number 42. Which allowed us to accept donations for the artwork that we purchased. And so that's really the only difference. As far as that wording that got put in on third reading about restoration and framing, I can't even remember now, but that's in there, and it's the difference is really the accepting donations language. Next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 23. And this deals with local government distributions. Obviously the same issue, but very different approaches in some ways. Probably the first difference is that we allocated $10 million for locals for direct distribution. They allocated six. The next really is the, we did $6 and $4 million to six to cities and towns, $4 million, so a 60-40 split. They did $4 million to cities and towns, $2 million to counties. So instead of 60-40, it's more two-thirds, one-third split. And then the other thing that they did were their flat distributions were changed. And so there's two communities under 35 population. They went ahead and gave them another $5,000, and they're going to get that as well off of our work from last year. But there are 35, let me think about it, or, there's 35 communities that have, excuse me, I think I said that wrong. I think there's 25 communities that have a population of 35 or greater, but under 1,000. And so Now I see my committee members talking whether it's 25 or 35. I'll just tell you, it's either 25 or 35. That's what I said. I said 35 plus 25 is almost 54. So it's almost 54 communities, because it's a really a significant amount. And they actually gave them a $25,000 one time, which we've never done. So this is kind of a unique thing in the funding, flat distribution. And so that's where we're at on that. And then really where we took it, we both grabbed that AML fund that reverted. And it's how they redirected it. They did a lot of it, most of it, frankly, through the Integrated Test Center. And you might recall that we did Engineering Building, Gillette Madison. We cashed out that remaining $2.3 million. And then we also did some at the High Bay Research Facility. Those are all projects that we've used prior balance AML dollars on before. The ITC is we've never done that before, and so we're going to have a pretty good discussion about that, obviously how it's funded, but then the amount. They're at $6 million, we're at 10, and then we have two different distribution formulas as well. Okay. Next, actually, is at the very bottom of page 2, we start the non-identicals, and you can see that one is deleted, so we'll flip over. There's a similar amendment on the next page, Mr. Speaker and members. So over on to page 3, these are all non-identicals. And the first one there is Senate Third Reading Amendment Number 5. And this does with the forestry program. And we defeated this amendment in the House. And it basically says if you have some money left over, it carries forward. But if you don't have any money, and it all depends on whether or not we fund this program in next budget session. If we fund it, the money reverts. If we don't fund it, the money doesn't, that's left in the program, stays out there until December 31st. Okay, next is Senate Second Reading Amendment Number 11, and we did not consider this amendment, and it's on the fiscal management system at the University of Wyoming, and you might recall that there was a $1 million in there, and we required a $3 million match of other funds, and then all the conditions about how they're going to reorganize their current resources and all those things. Well, all that language is in there, but the requirement for a $3 million match was taken out. The next item, you can see there's a deleted amendment by the same senator, and then he arrives at the language he wanted on Senate Third Reading Amendment Number 7. Now, we have this concept in the budget already. This clarifies the language and gets a little more specific, but it replaces that footnote 17 that we have in the budget with new language directing the university to modify the rates it charges for the any new or subsequent contracts on the research aircraft. And we required a sinking fund. That's what we're getting at, is that so 30 years from now, legislators sitting here won't have to come up with the whatever it will cost for another research aircraft for the University of Wyoming, that this will be built into their costs on every research flight they take. The customers, they'll charge the proper amount to replace engines and all the parts and eventually the aircraft. Now, they didn't do that in the 30 years ago when they bought this current aircraft. So this requires with the current aircraft to immediately set up this, and we also required it, but this is more specific, to set up that sinking fund to get started. So that clarifies a little bit. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment Number 16. And you can see the $240,000 for the Jackson Outreach Center Level 2 planning. We rejected that amendment in the House. But their funding source here takes it out of the first category of funding. So it takes out of general funds right now that are available now. Well, that are underwater right now. But we'll talk about that. So next is Senate Second Reading Amendment Number 22. And this, we did not consider this idea on this floor, and it talks about the university has $1 million retention incentive payments. And we hear about this a lot, that there's a lot of poaching going on in higher ed. And so, like, we have some of the best petroleum engineers, maybe the best in the world right now. And there are people that would love to have him at their university. And so you try to go in when he try to keep those folks at our university who are highly sought after. Well, we have it in the budget that is one-time money only. This amendment changes that and says that it will be part of the 17-18 standard budget. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 23. And this, we rejected this amendment. And this takes it out of Tranche 2, which would, the 2015 contingency, which would give Level 2 to the Animal Science Ag Building and to Central Wyoming College in Riverton. And so that's Level 2 planning for that. Okay, the next item actually has, I think, seven amendments. And I'll go, and I'll just basically summarize. Here's what happened in all those seven amendments. They deleted Jacoby Golf Course Phase 1 and 2 and deleted all the Evansville Bridge provisions from planning to construction. And there was a little, you know, moving around to water accounts and doing this stuff on second reading. And then in third reading, those projects all went out. Next is, this is really different than our House position, and this is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 30, and limitation on salary increases. And you saw that language that we had in the budget, and I said I'd like to come back with a little better language, and we adopted it on third reading. Well, they actually went the other direction, and modified the language to allow the governor to really say to any position in state government, exempt them from any salary caps or any salary position that we have put on them, and allows the governor to really exempt anybody from that requirement on increased budget salaries. You might recall, okay, Senate Second Reading Amendment number 31, and I, when we explained the budget, we talked that we have now just grandson of Sage Chicken breeding program, or little chicklet, or whatever they are. But anyway, this modified that very small language in that bill that says you can capture and transplant programs. So we're going to, as we get the report, we want to talk about capture and transplant. So that's a pretty significant amendment, and in all jest. But Senate Second Reading Amendment number 43, the last one on that page, we rejected this. Actually, this amendment was pulled on third reading. It was pulled, removed by the sponsor. And this, you might recall that we put $3 million in a contingency. We called it disaster contingency. We didn't want to call it fire contingency, because what we're understanding is that if we build this big fire contingency fund, federal government is maybe not as fast in paying back these bills, or even on some of these other disasters. And we talked about all the, so we didn't, the first item in the governor's budget we rejected, remember, was to refill 2 point some million into the disaster contingency, but we went ahead and put it in a different part and called it disaster contingency, and so it could be used for fires, for any. Well, this amendment says you can also do planning. So you can use some of that $3 million for planning for disasters, not just mitigating disasters. So I'm sure we'll discuss that. Okay, so, Mr. Speaker, then flipping over, members, to page 4. A couple more. There's three more issues. And the next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 2. And this requires public meetings. And I believe it requires meetings in Douglas, Wright, and Shoshone regarding the passing lanes and the whole report. And you can get online and read the specific language on the amendments, but how they're going to identify the issues, really why it wasn't done previously, and kind of go through the whole thing, but it's going to require public meetings. Next is Senate Third Reading number 12. The Military Department directed, actually this is small version of Evansville Bridge, and it says that directs the military department to work with the federal government to secure access for Evansville via the cemetery bridge. And if you looked on Google Earth, you can kind of see here's the town of Evansville, and then heading out to the north, kind of east, going to the State Veterans Cemetery. Well, that's all fenced off. We've had a lot of issues with right-of-way issues and access onto that road from that community. And so it's been a kind of an ongoing issue with that. Now this amendment says, instead of building this bridge over here, at least talk with the federal government and see if we can use this bridge. And so I'm sure we'll talk about that. So Senate file, the next one is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 14. And this really deals with science standards, modifies the footnote that you can actually look at next generation science standards, but we will develop unique standards to Wyoming. And we did not have any amendments on that. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendments. Restricted debate rules apply. Each member is allowed to speak two times. Any discussion on the amendments? Representative Nicholas has already spoken once. Okay, no discussion on the amendments. All right, in that case, pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1G, the mirror budget bill is referred to the Joint Conference Committee appointed by the presiding officers of both houses. The Joint Conference Committee appointees from the House are Harshman, Chair, Greer, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson. Now, the next order of business is appointment of additional conference committees, and I wanted to share with the body some more time that I spent with my nose in the rule book today. And with respect to the appointment of conference committees, our rules refer us to Section 769 of Mason's, Appointment of Conference Committees. And point 5 under there says, where there's a division in the House with reference to a bill, it is the established practice to appoint a majority of the committee from the prevailing side in the controversy, but to also appoint a representative from the minority. In committees of 3, 2 will represent the majority and 1 the minority. And the normal number on a conference committee is 3. I think we do that for everything except the budget bill. We use 5. So here's the issue that came up. We had a member that voted for a bill because his amendment was accepted and was appended on the bill. Then it went through the other body and came back with that amendment stripped off. And so then the question was, are we going to concur with what the Senate did or not? We voted not to concur. And that member voted no on concurrence. So he'd voted aye on the bill, but no on the concurrence. He voted aye because his amendment was on there. He came back, he voted no on the concurrence because the amendment was stripped off. So that leaves me in the dilemma. When I read this rule, it says when there's a division with respect to the bill, then a majority's got to be from the prevailing side, and there's got to be a representative from the minority. Well, is that on the vote on the bill, or is that the vote on the concurrence? And so as I read this, my ruling from the chair is going to be, and that's going to be the rule of the case until I go out that door the last time, it says appoint a majority of the committee from the prevailing side of the controversy. Okay, so I'm going to say the controversy is not the passage of the bill. The controversy is whether we concur or not. And so on the concurrence, that member having been a no vote on concurrence qualifies to be a representative from the minority on the conference committee. Okay, everybody with me? So, two more conference committees on, I want to do the one I was talking about first, House Bill 17. Conference committee will be Miller Chair, Connolly, and Greer. On the conference committee on House Bill 42, the committee will be Zwanitzer Dan, Chair, Larson, Lloyd, and Lindholm. Now we're at the exciting order of business of reading and signing of enrolled acts. The drama just gets better and better, doesn't it? The first act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 42. The clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 42 from Original House Bill 51, an act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 42, being Original House Bill 51. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 43 on House Bill 27.
Enrolled Act Number 43 on Original House Bill 27, an act relating to environmental quality.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 43, being Original House Bill 27. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 7.
Enrolled Act Number 7, Senate, from Original Senate File 38, an act relating to controlled substances.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 7, being Original Senate File 38. I have so signed. The next bill act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 8.
Enrolled Act Number 8, Senate, from Original Senate File 60, an act relating to deferred compensation plan.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 8, being Original Senate File 60. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 9.
Enrolled Act 9 from Original Senate File 64, an act relating to Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 9, being Original Senate File 64. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 10.
Enrolled Act Number 10, Senate, from Senate File 70, an act relating to public utilities.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 10, being Original Senate File 70. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 11.
Enrolled Act 11, Senate, from Original Senate File 94, an act relating to driving or having control of a vehicle while under the influence of intoxicating liquor or controlled substances.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 11, being Original Senate File 94. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 12.
Enrolled Act Number 12 from the Senate, from the Senate File 31, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 12, being Original Senate File 31. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 13.
Enrolled Act Number 13, Senate, from Original Senate File 6, an act relating to aquatic invasive species.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 13, being Original Senate File 6. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act 14.
Enrolled Act Number 14, Senate, from Original Senate File 34, an act relating to mines and mining.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 14, being Original Senate File 34. I have so signed.
Oh, just one pager. Okay.
The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 15.
Enrolled Act Number 15, Senate File 20, an act relating to school finance.
Enrolled Act Number 15, I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 15, being original Senate File 20. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 16.
Enrolled Act Number 16, Senate, from original Senate File 23, an act relating to enhanced oil and gas recovery.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 16, being original Senate File 23. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 17.
Enrolled Act Number 17 from the Senate, from original Senate File 25, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facilities.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 17, being original Senate File 25. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act.
This is a real heavy one.
18. The reading clerk will struggle with the bill.
Enrolled Act 18 from the Senate, from original Senate File 10.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 18, being original Senate File 10. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 19.
Enrolled Act Number 19 to the Senate, from original Senate File 37, an act relating to administration of government.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 19, being original Senate File 37. I have so signed. Committee announcements. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 10, Labor, will meet in 10 minutes in room 817 to consider the following bills. Senate File 90, Engrossed Medicaid Chiropractor Services 2. Senate File 145, Engrossed Hospital Uncompensated Care. Senate File 88, Engrossed Emergency Care, Stroke, and Acute Heart Attack Patients.
Chairman Zwanzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will not meet tomorrow night, but they will meet Thursday, 10 minutes after adjournment, to discuss interim topics. So please have those ready for when we meet. Thank you.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting on Wednesday, February 25th at 8 a.m. in room H10 to hear Senate File 144, Microbreweries Minimum Barrel Requirement.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, at 7 a.m. in room H11 to consider the three following bills. Senate File 80, Trespass Collect Data. Senate File 126, Water Quality. Senate File Number 9, Right to Farm. Just remember to fill out your calendars, and we'll talk more tomorrow.
Chairman Zwanzer, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, February 24th, upon noon recess, to hear the following three bills. Senate File 50, Tribal Liaisons. Senate File 118, Personal Opportunity with Employment Responsibilities, and Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants.
Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet tonight upon adjournment in room H10. We're going to talk about Senate File 8 and finish it tonight. On the good news, I did go see John Patton. He's in good spirits. He's sitting up in bed, but he's on oxygen and he has a little fluid in his lungs. So keep him in your prayers, and he says say hi to all.
Good. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 8 o'clock in room H18 on Wednesday to consider Senate File 10130, Lottery Commission Reporting Requirements.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. on February 24th, room 204, to hear re-referred bills, Senate File 51, Water Development Amendments, and Senate File 55, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Mr. Speaker, your Joint Conference Committee number one will meet on House Bill 73 and S-13 upon noon recess tomorrow, February 24th. And, Mr. Speaker, your Joint Conference Committee number one on the budget bill will meet at 12:30 during noon recess, 12:30 to 2 p.m. tomorrow in room 204, February 24th. Thank you.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your general file to be considered tomorrow, February 24th, is as follows. Senate File 119, 93, 27, 30, 45, 115, 73, 75, 24, 101, 58, 92, 44, 52, 4, 134, 132, 47, 124, 100, and 11. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 24th, 2015.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.